One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, HYPERTHETICAL.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Gamescoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield, and I have been on camera live for a long time today, but I'm going to keep going for you, our dear listeners. Joining me this week are Sam Claiborne.
First time on camera all day.
Justin Davis.
Scoop.
And sitting in for Tina Amini, who will hopefully return to Gamescoop at some point in our lifetimes. Mark Medina, is always a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Hello. Also first time on camera.
I mean, yeah, we're in meetings and stuff like that, okay? But like,
I've done nothing all day.
Mark, supposed to be in a meeting today.
What's going on? Did something happen? Or
yeah, so.
Oh, did I publish 30 videos in 30 minutes?
We kind of kicked off the whole E3 week this morning. Jeff Keighley's Summer Game Fest kickoff live happened, which was followed by an hour-long Day of the Devs presentation, and we did pre- and post-shows all around that, so there's lots to talk about. Going to be a great show. We'll definitely talk about the Death Stranding Director's Cut. We'll definitely talk about Tiny Tina's Wonderlands. But first, let's begin with Elden Ring, which was finally for all of the Soulsborne fans out there that have been dying for information on this game.
What's you say Eld now instead of old when news is old. Eld.
This game was revealed at the Microsoft press conference, I think at the last E3 in 2019. Since then. And the fan community for Elden Ring has taken it upon themselves to just basically invent a bunch of lore on their own. I love it, which is very cool. But now they don't have to do that anymore. Their work is done. We know what the game is, and it looks like a Dark Souls game.
Yes, but what did Jeff Goldblum mean when...
No. it's no secret that, you know, most of us aren't like diehard Soulsborne fans, but I think this game looks awesome and has amazing, you know, creature and character and world design, just like all these games do. And just like I did with Sekiro, I will absolutely dive in and make it as far as I can in the game.
I mean, like FromSoft, like, yeah, sure. Like, I don't need to be a fan of this style of game to like appreciate what that company's accomplished and like the direction that they've pushed video games over the last decade. And it has been so long since that company missed. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, even though Dark Souls 2 and 3, I don't think are quite as revered as the original, like Sekiro and especially Bloodborne, like for a lot of people, that was their game of the generation. And they haven't released a game in like 3 years. Like Elden Ring is the next one. It's their next big thing. Like it's not a, you know, it's not a B team working on it. It's like, this is the game that Miyazaki's been making for years now. And so like, I definitely understand like the hype and the frothing demand for this one.
It's also one of the biggest influences in video games in a very, very long time. Like this gameplay style influenced Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. And then it bleeds out even into the indie game, into like 2D scrolling pixel art indie games are adopting Souls-like combat mechanics as well.
Yeah, one of which was in the show, Soul and Sacrifice. Is that what it's called? Yeah. Salt and Sacrifice.
Salt and Sacrifice, yeah.
Yeah, Elden Ring, I'm a lot like Damon. I will play these Soulsborne games for as long as I can. And this looks like one of those games where I'm like, yeah, I cannot wait to dive in. You get to ride a horse. It looks beautiful. The monsters look terrifying. I don't know how good I'll be at it, but I will give it my best shot. And
you only get one horse. And if that horse dies, you don't have a horse for the rest of the game.
Well, so it's The Last of Us Part 2 all over again.
Dude, that's a joke. Would that be the worst mechanic that you could possibly have in the game?
You said that as a goof, and it's like 50-50 that's completely true.
Can you imagine a game giving you like this cute companion dog, and you're like, you have to keep it alive, though. And there's no saving. This is your dog.
Yep.
Keep it alive.
Well, you know, everyone dies a lot in these games, so it's kind of sad. Your horse is going to get left behind. Maybe like that's the mechanic instead of like...
Your horse is by the campfire. You have to get back.
You have to get back to find your horse. That's when you get your stuff back.
By your pile of bones.
If your horse was permadeath, like I would just restart every time. I would never get anywhere because I'd be like, my horse fell off a cliff. Time to start for the
point of getting to the end of the game would be keeping the horse alive. So, Damon, I have a question for you.
Okay.
What did the giant tree as the focal point of this game remind you of?
I thought that was going to be a joke. Oh. I'll be honest.
It is.
Like a blend of the Ents and the Giants from Game of Thrones?
I was thinking Faxanadu.
that's a name about. I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah, and you know what? It's actually a portmanteau of the words fantasy and Xanadu, which I discovered recently. Yes, I'm up on my Faxanadu lore. So I should be saying it, Faxanadu. But that sounds crazy.
Faxanadu
that
facts.
That just sounds crazy.
How did fax work its way into fantasy? Is it all from Xanadu? Or I mean, I don't know where it comes from. Because like Shadow Fax, like, always sounds really funny to me. I just think it's great.
Faxanadu has some good music.
The lore and world building of Elden Ring is written by George R. R. Martin. So it's like that may also
who
be
also
his.
Who also wrote Faxanadu.
Exactly. It's like, you know, there's a not small chance that Elden Ring is a portmanteau of something that man created.
Well, okay. I'm glad you mentioned that. It was a big deal that, you know, From Software is working with George R.R. Martin on this game. Of course, the big reveal that we got today was all about gameplay and sort of presenting the monsters and the boss fight. We didn't get anything about the story or the stakes or any of that. They could cover that off on a later beat. But you said something as we were getting ready to film, Justin, that maybe they, oh, okay. Because like, you know, we've covered off on how impressive these games are, but I don't think they do a great job of like telling a story, right? Maybe that's not what they try to do, but it's a little bit convoluted in there. And I guess I was thinking, now the Soulsborne game is going to have a story with well-written characters. And
you're making Soulsborne fans so mad right now.
Sorry.
No, yeah, you're right.
It's but a little bit of a minefield.
The story in the Soulsborne games is told in an oblique way. Like, it's there, but like you pick up a magic ring and read its description, and then you remember somebody that you met 20 hours ago. And like that connection is there. Like, it's all rock solid, but it is not a conventionally told sort of like, you know, you're not like, yes, the story that I get out of playing through this game a single time and beating the final boss is not. It's a very, very different kind of storytelling.
You're definitely dropped into a world that exists and has existed and for a very, very long time.
Yeah. So I totally get that. I know there's a lot of lore. I guess I just assumed perhaps wrongly that when they brought George R. R. Martin on, now they were going to actually write like a story into the game and lots of characters with dialogue. But
listen, you bring George R. R. Martin in when you want to finish a project, right? He's the finisher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He'll just wrap
George
right up.
Railroad Martin. Oh,
I think like this game was taking a while, right? Like we haven't heard about it in a long time. They're like, you know who we should get? We should get George in here. and get this done. Mm-hmm. And then he came in, and now we have a game that's coming out after 10 years.
And he also wrote, he wrote like 20,000 word descriptions of feasts and roast duck and just all this detail about the food.
But you only get to read those when you pick up a ring in the game.
Yeah. And like the
this ring was worn at the feast of.
That's what, like, man, that just never ends in Game of Thrones, man. You just describe, there's so much exposition about the roast that they eat at the feast. So what they hired him to do, he didn't write the storyline of the game, is he built the world. So he wrote the lore and backstory of the world, and Miyazaki, the game director, described it as like a dungeon master sort of setting the stage for the adventure. But then Miyazaki and his team actually wrote the scenario that then you go on in that game. And so really that's kind of like a chocolate and peanut butter situation where like one of the masters providing like the lore and foundation and backstory, but then the game developers that also are, you know, experts at their craft sort of crafting the actual scenario. Like it sounds great.
Yeah. But do you think they were like, George, do we have to use the facts of Enderdew tree? And he was like, yes.
Yes.
There have to be so many weddings in this. He's like, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Each level's a wedding.
Elden Ring is out January 21st, 2022. I think it's the earliest 2022 release date that we have right now. It's about a week out from Pokemon. So you got to decide.
Can we talk about just how crazy that is? Also, like a game that has basically just been in hiding comes out with this like amazing gameplay trailer that shows all these different things, and then all of a sudden they're just like, everybody just saw a chip clip I'm holding because I'm fidgeting, there was a chip clip on my desk, and then not only that, but then it's like, oh, also the game comes out in 7 months. Like that is wild. I did not expect that for I thought it was still a long time out.
After making a game for, you know, 4 years or however long that game has been in active development, like surely they must have tried very, very hard to get that game out in November instead. Mm-hmm. Like I'm a little, I don't necessarily, like Sam, I agree with you. I want games coming out all 12 months of the year. But if I was a suit with like Namco Bandai or FromSoft, surely I'd be like, just 5 weeks, just 5 weeks earlier, please.
Yeah.
Can you remove the horse and then put it out earlier?
Yeah.
Also, it's coming to old gen and current gen, correct?
Call yes. Me? Yep.
Which is really, really cool.
And a free update if you buy it on last gen consoles, I believe.
Oh. Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So if those $60 pre-orders are up now, so might be a good idea to grab one if you want to. You know, I don't know that it's going to be a $70 game, but at least it would potentially save you $10.
Yep. Sam and Mark, you're both fans of Death Stranding, I believe.
Yeah, great fan. Yeah,
totally.
I like it more and more the farther I get from it because I don't remember the stuff I didn't like about it, and I just remember the good stuff.
Do you like it enough to play it again on PS5?
I was talking to Tina about that today, actually. I was like, I think I could just drop everything and just play Death Stranding again, and I'd have no problem with that. But it'd be really irresponsible of me to like not make dinners and feed the cat and stuff like that. So I really have to balance what I do. There's so many games I want to play right now. Like I can barely play Mass Effect. I'm like halfway through Mass Effect 2, which I can't even believe, you know, I've got that far in it. And like, I want to play new stuff and it'd be really hard for me to jump back in. But boy, I can already tell it looked better on the PS5 just from what they showed. That game looks great. Mm-hmm.
Mark, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same. Like, I have Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade installed, and it's like, it's such a, I guess you could say, you know, being in this industry, it's such an irresponsible thing to be like, this 40-hour game, I'm going to play it again now on PlayStation 5. But then the second Death Stranding, you know, they showed this trailer, I was like, I knew, like, obviously, we don't know anything about what this teaser is, but
it's very Metal Gear-y.
This is the biggest interior you could ever have in this game. Everything is tiny rooms.
The second he's walking through the hall, I was like, okay, this is new stuff.
Yeah.
But I knew that it would be accompanied by a next gen release. Of course it would. Like, why wouldn't it? And so, or current gen release, I guess. And so that was my immediate thought, was like, I don't know what this is. This looks cool. Maybe it's a gag, the more Metal Gear-y it got. But I knew that it meant it was coming to PlayStation 5, and I was just like, oh, that's it. Like, I'm playing Death Stranding again, because I had already been thinking about wanting to play it again, and now now it's coming to PlayStation 5. Like, how could you not want to? You're going to be able to use the haptics on the DualSense.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you're going to feel the weight between the different boxes. Like, this game was built for the DualSense. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait. Also, this trailer is just wonderful. I have my toys here. I have my Sam. He's in a box because that's where he belongs now. Man, I love this trailer. But I also wouldn't be surprised if this was nothing.
That wouldn't frustrate you? Because this seems like it could be really cool and something that people want?
I mean, it's tough, right? Because it is the director's cut. So to call it a director's cut and it just be a port to PS5 is super weird. Director's cut implies that things were cut out of the game. So yeah. Maybe it's like there's like challenge rooms.
It implies the cutscenes are longer to me.
Yeah. Also, yeah. Like,
it could be.
I don't genuinely believe this. I want to preface this. This is a goof. But, like, the name of the studio is Kojima Studios, so yeah, you don't get to claim, oh, now I'm making my director's cut.
Yeah.
Who cut the first one if it wasn't Kojima?
Yeah, exactly.
But I do understand that by cut, they just mean whatever. Game of the Year edition, call it whatever you want. Like, a version with more stuff is the implication.
And there was DLC, so they always include that. There's, like, the best of thing, and, yeah.
I also want to point out that they said that at first I thought they said it was coming in a few weeks. And I was like, what? Not surprised that that's not happening. But they said that we'll be getting more details in a few weeks, which heavily implies to me that there is a Sony conference this month and that we'll see more Death Stranding, because they did make a point to start Death Stranding, even though it's on PC now, to start that trailer with the PlayStation Studios logo.
Hmm.
But that's just a guess.
Do you think anybody over at Konami has even noticed yet?
I know, that's so wild to think that he made a whole Metal Gear like trailer. That's why. That's crazy. What I wonder. So,
if anyone out there hasn't seen it, this trailer has Norman Reedus entering a facility that looks very Metal Gear Solid. There's a bunch of enemies he has to get past somehow. He empties out a cardboard box and even gets in the cardboard box to see if he can fit inside it, but then he doesn't actually use it. He puts it back. So, I mean, it's like...
Well, because he gets in it the wrong way.
Yeah, yes.
He does get in it the wrong way.
But I think there's a lot of other meaning in that trailer, but I will never know what it is. I'm not going to pay attention to that much.
You got those oranges.
Yeah, like, what's the orange?
I was going to say, what's up with the oranges?
Why is Master Chief in it?
Yeah, you did. Well,
but it's like, he looked like a predator to me.
The enemies, yeah. I mean, it would be so cool to think he could like do some sort of a spinoff or an expansion that is Metal Gear in all but name only.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what people want.
Exactly. Right? So that makes me wonder if not that, is this just like a big FU middle finger to Konami? Like, I don't know.
Right. And honestly, when it comes to Kojima, like, it could be either way. I would not be surprised if they were like, hey, this is just a PS5 version. All that was just a joke.
Yeah.
Or if they're like, hey, there's challenge missions now. And
yeah, exactly.
Either way, I would not be surprised one bit.
This is like, I never played Death Stranding, and like, but I'm intrigued by it because on the one hand, I really, really like games that do something new and different. Like, it's not just a shooter platformer, but like, here's a new style of gameplay. So it's like, that makes it very much a Justin game. But then on the other hand, it's like Kojima, I'm completely over the Kojimaisms and the 20-minute long cutscenes and just the total, just like that style of game. Like, I think I played each Metal Gear less than the one before it, kind of starting with 3, then 4, then 5. So, I don't know. Maybe this is an opportunity for me to finally give it a shot.
This game doesn't have long cutscenes, though.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking. It's got super long cutscenes.
It certainly does. You know what it doesn't have, though? And I mentioned this earlier. It does not have interiors. Like, that game is an interesting... It's always in the open world. And whenever you go talk to somebody, it's either a hologram where they're talking to you from their like portal of their house, or it's like an elevator that goes into something underground. But you never go to those spaces
because you can't fit all those boxes through a door.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And also because there's some, like, you're exposed to the air, but everybody else can't be. Like, there's this whole thing. So it's like, it's really weird and strangely world buildingly exciting to me when I saw like that storage space, because all you see is the boxes in the ground all the time. It's just really strange to see that. It was just interesting.
Maybe I'll wait.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, maybe I'll wait until the community has built up all the roads, and then by the time I play the game, then it'll be like easy mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on my server, I was the road builder, and I had so much fun.
That's something I didn't think about is like, I remember when we played, you know, we played early and not a whole lot was built. I was behind a YouTuber, Young Ye. I was behind him the entire time because it was like he was just, I could just tell he was building right in front of me. So it's very interesting to think, like, are they going to port those worlds over to PlayStation 5? Like, or is it just like starting from scratch? Like, because that would be tough to go back to. The game is very built out now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. The other thing that's weird about that whole Metal Gear stuff is like that is not how that game plays. Like the shooting and all that stuff really took a backseat to, you know, the walking mechanics. And so it'll be interesting if they try to suddenly turn Death Stranding into this like stealth shooter. That's not
what the game was. You sneak around camps.
Yeah, but that's not. That's not what that game is, though. Like, you can do that, but, like, the shooting is pretty weak in Death Stranding. So, it's
mainly tranquilize people, just like Metal Gear and that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I honestly don't care. If it's Death Stranding on PS5, awesome. If it's Death Stranding on PS5, but with more stuff, even better.
Well, as Kojima himself told us today, we should find out more about the Death Stranding Director's Cut in a few weeks.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Mark, are you a Borderlands guy?
Yeah.
excited for Tiny Tina's Wonderlands?
I'm excited for the cast. Holy smokes. Like, yeah. I saw the thing, and it was like Wanda Sykes and Andy Samberg, and I was like, wow, this is like, you know, it's really, man, I can't remember the name of the DLC, but, you know, a DLC for this exists for Borderlands 2, where it's like they play D&D, and so it's like, it's kind of crazy that they've, you know, made a whole game out of this. It's really, really cool. Yeah, I'm very excited for this.
And Will Arnett. I don't know why people keep disrespecting him.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry. I do love Will Arnett.
It's because him and Amy Poehler split up and we had to pick sides.
Oh no.
It's Team Amy.
Now I'm sad.
I can't believe I had to learn that on Game Scoop.
Sam's like, what?
So yeah, this is something that leaked ahead of E3. Mm-hmm. And it's a standalone game coming early 2022. We don't really know much about it yet. But man, I remember loving the Tiny Tina DLC for Borderlands 2, but it's been so long, Mark, I have a hard time even remembering what it was like.
That's what I mean, is like, I remember it was supposed to be like a D&D, but like Borderlands 2 DLC, like, man, we're talking like, that was a long time ago.
9 years ago. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this sounds cool. And then Gearbox is doing something around E3, so maybe we'll learn more about it then.
I think they did. Like, I'm really impressed. Like, I feel like they pulled a little bit of a magic trick where, like, Borderlands is Gearbox.
Oh, Randy Pitchford.
Well, okay. Yeah, no pun intended, actually. But, you know, like, they clearly have a need to – Borderlands is the big thing at Gearbox, right?
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But like, you can almost see, like, the conversation had of, like, they don't want to keep making Borderlands 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So it's, like, it's such a natural – like, once they revealed the game, I'm like, oh, of course. Like, you know, some kind of co-op looter shooter, but, you know, with magic in a fantasy setting and then all this, you know, Tiny Tina craziness. Like, I'm totally on board just from, like, this two-minute trailer, even though it is, like, kind of high concept and sort of a weird franchise extension, like – it just feels really, really smart and cool. And then, you know, obviously the voice casting helps put it over on people that maybe were a little bit more skeptical.
Yeah. And something I'm super like, Borderlands is already like nuts, right? And not realistic and over the top. But that's like the whole point. And so the fact that it's like now they've built in this thing where it's like, hey, it's a Dungeons and Dragons game. It really makes it where it's like anything kind of goes in this. You know, you're going to have characters that can do spells and just do all sorts of stuff. It's going to make the wacky Borderlands even wackier. And also good on Ashley Birch, man. She is just like, she's killing it, man. She's in so much good stuff now.
Yeah, no kidding. And I do wonder, so I think I heard correctly in the presentation that Tiny Tina, Ashley Birch's character, is sort of like the DM, like the one taking them through this adventure. And then those three characters, Wanda Sykes, Will Arnett, and
Andy Samberg.
Andy Samberg are like the player characters. That was my takeaway. Anyway, what I'm getting at is I wonder if there's like a fourth secret person yet to be revealed, because I don't think that was meant to be Ashley Birch's Tiny Tina character.
Maybe it's you.
Ooh.
What is this game?
You just blew my mind.
What type of game is this?
Well, so, you know, Borderlands is a looter shooter.
Yes,
and they said this was as well, right?
It's a fantasy looter shooter, basically. It's like, you know, a very silly Diablo meets Borderlands was my takeaway. But we haven't seen gameplay yet, so I guess we'll find out.
Okay,
but you're right, Justin, about how Gearbox is, for lack of a better word, sort of trapped making Borderlands. There was 10 years between Borderlands 2 and 3, almost 10 years. And in that time, there was so much DLC and add-on content released for Borderlands 2, and they had the pre-sequel, and they had Tales from the Borderlands, and they got into game publishing, and then they tried Battleborn. Yeah. And when they couldn't stall anymore, they're like, okay.
Yeah. Borderlands. Although I don't think pre-sequel was them. The 2K spinoff, but you're not wrong. Like, and especially that second extra extension, that season of Borderlands 2 DLC, where like they were really the model for like that. You know, that game's not a game as a service, but it was the progenitor for like, oh, like if you keep supporting a game, the community in turn will keep supporting you. And I think it paved the way for games that really leaned into that.
Yep. As a side note, Sam and Justin, I was dismayed that you did not respond to my Slack last night.
Well, I didn't get it.
So I'm watching. My wife and I are doing a whole rewatch of 24, and it's been awesome. It's been so good, and we're in season 7. And this guy shows up with the FBI, and we're like, that guy is really familiar. Who's that guy? And it was my wife who identified him. And she doesn't even like this show. She's like, it's the Bones of Your Money guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't realize that.
The guy from the I Think You Should Leave sketch that we love, the best sketch on that first season, I think, is in season 7 of 24. It's crazy. And then maybe Mark Medina would know this. Did you ever watch 24, Mark?
No.
One of the main female characters from The Last of Us is an FBI agent on that series. Is it Tess? Ooh. Is Tess a character?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep, she's like
she's in the first one, yeah.
Yeah, she's like one of the main FBI agents in season 7.
I recognized the face when you sent me the message, but I didn't I didn't make the connection till now that I'm looking at it with fresh eyes.
Yeah.
Also, what is I've never ever this is totally on a tangent. I've never heard of I Think You Should Leave, and now I'm just hearing about it it's one of those things where I've never heard of it and now I'm hearing about it. This is like the fourth day in a row somebody's brought up this thing. Oh, really? I've never even heard of.
Well, they announced season 2, which is why it's in the news. It's the best. After you're done with Game Scoop, just go watch it on Netflix. I don't even
you'll watch it straight through. It's like 6 episodes, they're 20 minutes long, you know, like you'll get right through it.
Yeah, interesting.
It's okay. Just fantastic. It's a fantastic sketch comedy show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just one of those. I've never heard of it. And it's the same thing with Letterkenny. I had never heard of Letterkenny. And then someone mentioned it. And then it was like all the time. Now I hear about it all the time. It's like, I watched Letterkenny, though. So.
It's just like when you get a white car.
Yep. Same car.
Yeah.
Yep. Damon, one of my hobbies is, or just something that I enjoy, is when someone gets super mega famous and you're watching some random thing. It's like, whoa, like Viggo Mortensen's in it for like 10 seconds. And you're like, oh, yeah. That was weird.
And on, you know, 24, each season is 24 episodes long. There's so many characters. There's so many guest stars on 24. Aisha Tyler's on there at one point. Dennis Hopper is in there. Ricky Schroeder from Silver Spoons is on a season. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, he was
in Janine Garofalo. Janine Garofalo is on there.
That's a really strange show to pick to rewatch.
I think it is.
Well, I hadn't watched it since it all aired.
Are there 24 episodes per season?
Yeah. Yes.
It's too much.
Are there an hour?
That's too much. So much.
When you want to watch TV, it's a good thing if you want to have like a long show that's going to.
It's just such a product of its time. Like that show should be 10 hours. Like,
well, because didn't it come back and they were like, okay, it's only 12 episodes or whatever.
They brought it back in like a limited series.
And like the concept is so cool. It's like, it's an actual day told out over 24 hours. But then it's like the daughter has nothing to do for like 12 of those hours.
Yeah. I mean, the plots are absolutely ridiculous nonsense. Yeah. But I will say to the show creators credit, they do a pretty good job of, you know, there's so many characters, the bad guys are in so many different locations, the bomb is always moving. They do a pretty good job of like, you know, letting the audience know what's going on, who are the major players, what's our objective right now, where's the threat. They do a really good job of all that. Anyway,
I'm in season 4 of Schitt's Creek, which I've never watched.
It's great, right?
It's super great. It starts a little rough, you know. I think everybody will tell you that.
Yeah.
But now some plot things are coming together, and some people are dating each other that are really adorable and great.
Yep.
That's another show I haven't watched.
Oh my gosh, Mark.
Well, Amanda's super into that show. I'd also never seen The Good Place, and so I chose to go for that one first. And
dude,
man, that show's great.
Well, I was gonna say, if you like Parks and Rec, you're gonna like The Good Place.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, I love The Good Place. Kristen Bell. Oh my god, I love her so much.
I like how Schitt's Creek is a family show that like both Eugene Levy's kids are in it. I think that's like really funny, and like you can see a little bit of extra dynamics in that when they're acting together. I just love that.
Yeah.
And Alexis is the best character. I think she's so funny. She's like that actor is a comedic genius. Like the stuff she does with just like her face and like micro expressions is so funny. I can't stand it.
Everybody's so good on that show. Anyway, this has been TV Scoop.
Yep.
Another game that I was excited to see revealed today, although I had kind of like a Drake meme moment, a reverse Drake meme moment, was Metal Slug Tactics, a new Metal Slug game that's tactics with awesome pixel art. Love it. But only coming to PC. Well, that's kind of annoying. Hopefully that'll change.
It could also last forever. That's a weird, weird choice too.
It's also IGN reaction guys moment.
Yep. Reverse IGN reaction guys moment.
It had not only the pixel art, but it had the anime, cheap anime looking cutscenes, which I thought was really funny. And then, I mean, the game, who knows what that game will end up like. I'm not really super into square-based moving strategy games, but I love seeing this universe like in this amazing pixels again. Like it's just looks amazing.
That was my exact takeaway. It's like I've been playing Metal Slug my whole life, and like to see it, even just like changing the camera slightly, it's just like whoa! It's just like just re-envisioning that stuff. Not from an isometric standpoint is just awesome. Like I honestly only barely care about the gameplay of Metal Slug games. It's just the animation, the pixel art.
Exactly.
It was great when you could put quarters in.
Yeah.
I'm glad the blood splatter is in there. That was always an important part of the games. Yeah. Although, as Sam probably knows, you can turn that off with a dip switch in the arcade machines.
It's so funny. I'm like the opposite. When it was being revealed and the people I was on a call with, we were doing clips and stuff, like they're like, it's Metal Slug. And they're like, oh, it's a tactics game. And I was like, I don't really know much about Metal Slug. I don't think I've ever really played or anything. But the tactics part of it has me interested because I like tactics games.
Yep.
So
yeah.
Maybe I'll give it a go.
Yeah, I love
it. So Metal Slug is from like the era of the best, most perfected sprite animation. Mm-hmm. And it's so like it's like
right Marvel from versus that era, Capcom.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just like amazing sprite animation. And you can like look up great articles about this on the internet where people like, show like how many more frames there are for each animation. Like it's incredible. So like they seem to be getting at that with this. And what I've always heard is like it's actually really tough to do that with today's technology. We just don't have like a team of people that just knows how to do that anymore. It's like an antiquated technology. So it's like really exciting to me to think of like some kind of, you know, engine built to start being able to do stuff like that again, because most people are like, oh yeah, this is like a retro 8-bit looking game or like a Super Nintendo looking game. Like doing that like 32-bit era like Neo Geo PlayStation 1 2D is like really, really cool, and I'd love to see
it's
that.
Like I always picture like Castlevania Symphony of the Night, like it's like one of the prettiest games ever, and it's like that style it always will is not be. Easy to do. It's that style is not true. Easy to do, and it's not something you see a lot of anymore.
100 years from now, Symphony of the Night will still look good.
Yep.
And then Justin mentioned the isometric view. Just seeing Metal Slug that way made me think it could even work as still as a run and gun shooter, just in more like Mercs or Ikari Warriors or Commando, right? I'd like to play a version of that Metal Slug as well. Yeah. And it's funny, this is a question we get at GameScoop fairly often. It's like, what classic game genres or what classic game franchises would you like to see reimagined in a different genre? Yeah. And it never occurred to me, Metal Slug Tactics.
It's great. Yeah, sure. For me, it was always Rabbids Tactics, and I didn't really get that. They added Mario and ruined it.
Oh. Wow. I love that game.
They had a Mario and made Rabbids likable or palatable.
In your
opinion. That's my opinion. Speaking of nice pixel art, we got an update on Axiom Verge 2, which continues to look very cool. Unfortunately, we still don't have a release date for that one yet. That one was supposed to be out already, but it was delayed till later in the year. They did announce platforms. It's coming to, we already knew it was coming to Switch and PC. Now it's coming to PS4, PS5. The original Axiom Verge is on Xbox though, so I can't imagine why the sequel wouldn't come to Xbox eventually. But
it's on Switch also.
Yeah, it is on Switch. I think all of us played it except for maybe Mark. And I think we all had the same experience with the first Axiom Verge. I liked it a lot, but just fell off it at some point, and maybe I should go back and try to finish it again.
Yeah, I never completed it. It had all the elements of a cool Metroid-like, but it didn't really draw me in with the, for instance, I'm most of the way through Hollow Knight. That is a very different experience that really just captured my imagination. I just love everything about it. Axiom Verge is a little bit more simplistic than that, but I know a lot of people that love it to death, and I think it was like the product of a really, really smart dev cycle. Like it's a cool, clever game. This game looks better in every way for me personally, because I love how it looks. I think it's its own thing. I wouldn't compare this to any other era. It's like modern pixel art. And I think that's a really cool way to go.
Yeah. I mean, it's up there with Metal Slug as some of the best pixel art I've ever seen, certainly. And, you know, lavishly animated, both the original and the sequel. It's not something I would have expected to get a sequel, but I'm delighted that we are getting one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually have played it. I do like the game. There's also a Devs React to Speedruns for the first one, if you're interested in that.
What's the speedrun? Well, how long
is it? Time?
So it's the only TAS speedrun we've ever done where they reacted to a community tool-assisted speedrun. Oh, and it's super fun to watch. It's super fun to just see them like barely touch pixels and bounce around. And it's Dan Adelman and Tom Happ. And they're just like, what is this? Like, that's a fun episode.
Was the time? Do you remember the time? I just want to know the time.
No, okay. I don't remember. 20 something.
Nobody knows.
Like 25 minutes or something like that.
I played that game for like 6 hours.
I know.
Yeah.
It's apparently connected to the first game, like same storyline, but you play a different protagonist, and this character is more focused on melee combat this time around. And the dev apparently heard from a lot of players that they enjoyed exploring the world a lot, but then got stuck on a boss at some point, and that was where their game had to end. So now this time around, the bosses are still there, but you can apparently just run past them if you want. You don't even have to beat any of the bosses in order to finish the game. But if you do want to fight the bosses, you'll get a reward for that. So I thought that was interesting.
I think that's a really cool choice. Hollow Knight, for instance, handles that in a different way, where it's like you can back away from a boss encounter and go about your stuff. You know you're not going to get some upgrade, but you can continue exploring, and you can, most importantly, like really ready yourself. Right, that's a great part of a Metroid-like, is that you can be like, okay, I'm not ready for this boss yet. I need to go find more energy tanks. But I never felt that more than in a game like Hollow Knight, where the bosses can be way, way hard if you don't have the right moves, or because you can hit them out of order. So like sometimes I would look up in a guide, like, should I even be fighting this boss now? Because otherwise I would spend hours obsessing over it and then realize like, no, you should be fighting this boss three bosses after this. So working in elements of like that is really neat. And then I love the idea of being able to beat the game without beating any of the bosses and then getting a shame ending. I love shame endings.
Shame endings are great. It does bring up a philosophical question of like, well, just skip the boss. And it's like, why not just skip this platform? You just skip
the level,
just skip the whole game. Why not? I think it was what's the fighting game, like the Guilty Gear fighting game that has a story mode? It just came out. I watched Mitchell's review, and
Guilty Gear Strive,
and it has a really long story mode, but the story mode's just an anime. Like it's not punctuated with like character fights. It's just here's a 4-hour movie in our game, and I'm like, wow. Damn. Because then, and then, you know, Mitchell praises it because it doesn't have to artificially, like, to create a gameplay moment. It doesn't have to, compromise their story where, like, now these two characters fight. I'm like, oh,
yeah,
that's wild.
Huh. And then the last game I wanted to bring up from the event today was called Planet of Lana. And this looks really interesting right up my alley. It's a cinematic puzzle adventure, 2D with hand-painted visuals. So we can look forward to platforming puzzles, stealth sequences, and then a companion mechanic between this little alien cat creature and the person, Lana, presumably, where they have to sort of cooperate in order to get through challenges. And the whole game runs at 4K, 60 frames per second. It's an Xbox console exclusive coming in 2022. I'm getting some inside and more colorful Inside/Limbo vibes from this one.
Yeah, I can already tell, and this isn't insider information, I can just tell from the trailer that like this game is going to make me devastatingly sad by the end. Something horrible is going to happen.
Yeah, like you can see it happening right there in front of you.
What it's going to be is that you have as many lives as you want, but that little mouse cat thing,
permadeath.
Just one life. Permadeath.
Yeah.
One life. And then it's your choice. Do you start the game over, you monster, or do you keep going?
How can you?
Yeah, looks beautiful though. More games like that, please.
And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from James in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Let the questioning begin.
I don't know if it was James.
Sass-ass.
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 We've definitely had people writing in from there before because I remember you saying that.
Well maybe we can figure out what he submitted last time and we'll just get it really easily.
Okay,
sure.
The GameScoop historian, I hope, because somebody rewatched every single episode and cataloged stats and stuff, and it's like it'd be nice to know areas that people have written in from. Like just as how many times is Big
Tommy
games
style? From Canada are always from after 1990.
They didn't have any games before then.
Is this an action game, an RPG, or a fighting game?
Yes.
that question.
I mean, okay, well, like, was it an RPG?
No.
Wait, you said action, RPG, and what else?
Fighting.
Okay. Is it a fighting game?
No.
Okay, so it's an action
game. Here's what I would have done instead of that is ask if there's multiplayer. But that would have not, maybe that would have been. Okay, so did this come out after the year 2000?
No.
Oh.
Out in the 1980s.
Yes, that's five.
80s Gosh. Action. Is this based on a license?
No.
Was this game originally released in arcades?
Yes.
Okay. 80s before, arcade game.
Was this released in arcades before 1983?
No.
Was this game made in Japan?
Yes.
I guess wasn't too much happening in the American arcade scene until a little bit later.
No, I mean, Atari was dominant. I think that's a good question. Midway was all over the place still.
Also, it's Pac-Man.
No, that's before 1983.
Everyone's favorite action game. that's before 83? Jeez.
I miss the era when games just didn't have genre. Like, it's a maze game. It's like, what?
It's a eating dots game.
Is this game a Sega game?
Yes, that's 10.
Okay. I'm thinking it's what's it called? The one where you move around the screen and it was like really 3D for its time and you're a floating man.
Space Harrier?
Yes, Space Harrier. Space Harrier, or it could be a brawler. I just don't know if, because there's like all these ninja brawlers.
Space Harrier may have been like 1990.
No, it's 80s. It will blow your mind. It's from like 1986 and it looks like a 1980.
Does this game take place in space?
No,
Space Harrier doesn't take place in space.
Oh,
Mark.
Well, how the hell am I supposed to know that? It's called Space Harrier.
So they also made Outrun, which
yeah, which I think we call a driving game.
It's not a racing game; it's a driving game.
What is a driving game compared to, like, Grand Theft Auto? Is that a driving game?
No, it's because you're not the object. You're not racing anybody. You're just driving.
Yeah.
So Grand Theft Auto could be a driving game.
I don't know.
I think it's space game.
It's a car stealing game.
Was this game? I don't know. Should I ask about its graphics?
They made Sega. They made Afterburner too, right? Using the Space Harrier tech.
It looks similar.
Do you play as a floating man floating around shooting things?
No.
Cool.
All right, so it's not.
You play as a floating robot.
I don't know. I don't know that much about Sega's early history.
We'll be able to get this. I mean, if it's a brawler, I mean, that's where we Altered Beast, Golden Axe, it's all that stuff. Everything got ported to the Genesis too. Alien Syndicate, I think, is another one.
Are all those 80s games?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Is it a brawler?
Of a sort.
It's Altered Beast.
Do you transform into a beast?
No.
Oh, man. What? There's also a ninja game that they did. Ninja Warrior. No, that's one of the three screens.
Yeah, what's that one that Damon likes with the ultra, ultra wide screen?
Shinobi. Well, yes. I was talking about Ninja Warrior, but I think Shinobi is where we're going to go with this. Is this a ninja game?
No, that's 15.
Wow.
Oh, God.
It's a brawler. It's a brawler of a sort. It's from the 80s.
Can you just help me out here, Damon? Is Shinobi a Sega game?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. Did Sega make an early fighting game? I can't think. I don't know. I don't really know that much about Sega's early arcade history, actually. Besides, I think
I've named a lot of them.
I know it from playing Yakuza.
You know what? They published Tetris in Japan.
Oh.
Nintendo, United States, and Atari in the United States in two different platforms, and Sega in Japan. So Nintendo, Atari, and Sega all published Tetris. All right. Let's see here. It might be a little bit earlier. It might be like one of these top-downy Sega games. There's also Fantasy Zone, which is a shooter.
Yeah, I'm still stuck on... It's a brawler, but not a ninja game, and not Altered Beast, and we eliminated something else, too.
I mean, Golden Axe is the other one.
Oh.
But I think that's just like such a straight brawler.
Yeah. What else could it be?
I don't know. I can't tell where to go with this.
It's not based off a license.
Does this game have sequels?
Yes.
It's not Space Harrier.
I already eliminated Space Harrier because it doesn't take place in space, guys.
If it's a Sega, I mean, like, think about like what Sega like puts out now, you know, like, is there anything from that era that they return to?
I mean, no.
The arcade game thing. I mean, I could ask if it was on Master System, because that would help us get the earlier ones versus Genesis. But some things were just ported to Genesis anyway.
It's probably Golden Axe.
I just don't. I don't get the brawler situation with that.
They made like a weird wrestling game, didn't they?
I don't know. Can you play as multiple characters?
Yes.
That's a pretty good question.
Can you play as a dwarf?
Yes.
Okay. Is it Golden Axe?
Yes, which I would consider a hack and slash game.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's like, yeah. Ooh, just because, you know, Double Dragon is a brawler. I would think Golden Axe maybe hack and slash, but okay. You know, that's all kind of in the same
family. It makes sense. It took us way long to get there. By the way, this is the Genesis version that's being shown. Golden Axe still looks like super unique in its arcade form. It's a pretty cool looking game.
Yeah. 1989 for both the arcade and Genesis versions.
Wow. Hey, you can play as Gilius Thunderclad, the dwarf.
Yeah.
I never really made the connection until just this moment, how much of like a progenitor Golden Axe was for like the D&D brawlers that would come later.
From Capcom.
Capcom made those, but like the vibes are very similar.
I had a Golden Axe machine that was in a converted Asteroids Deluxe cabinet. So you'd always have to ruin a game for Golden Axe because it didn't come out as its own cabinet. And so it had like the Asteroids machine, and then like the side art for that was like asteroids being shot in space. And then they put like a decal over that of the axe and the sword like this. And then the Golden Axe logo. And it actually looked really good. Irreversible though. It would never be an Asteroids game again for many reasons, let alone that it was a vector game that was completely gutted.
Mark, the whole selling point of the Sega Genesis at launch was that you could play these arcade games at home, that and Ultra Beast. And they looked pretty darn close to the arcade.
Yeah, for sure. They nailed it. To what I bet by the end of the Genesis lifecycle would have looked exactly like it too. I think those games are kind of rushed as ports.
Yep.
My first game console was a PlayStation 2. So
Well, I also distinctly remember, and I've told this in a different way before, but I remember playing Golden Axe in the arcade in 1989. Because I went to a pizza place in like St. Louis, I think, visiting my cousins, and I played it. And you know, I remember having root beer and pizza and eating and playing Golden Axe, which is a great arcade memory. But what I distinctly remember about it is I was like, "This is the best looking video game I've ever seen," and I just wanted to see the graphics in it. And that was the draw of those brawlers at the time, is that they were the best looking games imaginable. Yep. And they kind of traded gameplay for that, right? I mean, and then the Simpsons and the Turtles games, like those came right after it. Amazing looking games. They just looked unbelievable to a little kid at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Those games felt impossible. It's like, how does this exist? Because like the NES, you know, couldn't do anything even close to that.
Yep. Yeah. It was that era where you could go put in quarters to something and be like, whoa, this is like the most high-tech piece of like equipment I've ever seen play a video game. Not like that.
Yeah, it's pretty smart. It's so different from the approach arcade manufacturers took with like Pac-Man and I don't know, Joust, Defender.
Yeah.
It's like you're not really seeing anything new no matter how long you play. So, you know, people might get bored with it, but if there's something really cool to see right around the corner on the next level, keep putting those quarters in, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the Simpsons did that really well because they would have jokes and the levels would change. Yep. So they would do that, and like it would cost you about $15 by the end of it, and like getting $15 out of, plus it could be four players getting $15 out of, right?
Yeah.
So getting $60 out of one player over 3 months from a Pac-Man machine is pretty equivalent. So like they kind of figured out a different business model for these. They were just like, get the money faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very cool. Thank you for the suggestion, James in Saskatchewan. Viewers and listeners, if you have your own suggestions for 20 questions, email them to me at gamesoup@ign.com. And I am going to wrap things up a little bit early this week because, guys, my almost 2-year-old son is having his first music concert tonight.
Oh. Is he performing?
See. They all are.
Yeah, performing in air quotes.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be very organized and calm, and they will all sit there very still and be very well behaved. It's going to be great.
It's incredible. It's going to be just like the it's going to be just like the cat circus.
It's going to be just matter. Like the cat circus.
Like if they get up and walk away, that's also very entertaining.
And then all the kids are going to spend the night in a U-Haul truck right on the street there. Anyway,
remember to prepare him for hecklers. Just make sure he knows how to handle them.
Okay. Yeah. Duck. Anyway, that's all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you to Sam. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Justin. Thank you to Alan working behind the scenes to make the show possible. Hey, it's E3. There's going to be lots of cool stuff to talk about over the next week. Definitely going to be a fun Game Scoop next episode to look forward to. Please be excited. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.